Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Climate change is often portrayed and perceived as a science issue. We need science to understand the causes and impacts, and we need new technologies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and adapt to inevitable changes. But science alone can't solve climate change. For that, my next guests argue, we're going to need ethics and art and literature and, quite frankly, every discipline out there. Stephen Allison is professor of ecology and evolutionary biology and earth system science at the University of California, Irvine, and Tyrus Miller is the dean of the School of Humanities there. Together, they've written about why science needs the humanities to solve climate change. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So science alone is not enough. Honestly, seems like kind of a no-brainer. Why did you feel that it was necessary to write this piece for theconversation.com and make that case?
Well, we thought that it was good to get the word out that here at UC Irvine and other places around the country and around the world, that scientists are trying to think more broadly. They're trying to think outside their scientific box and interact with scholars from across the campus and from across many different disciplines. And I think that the motivation for this was that we aren't making enough progress in climate action and addressing this huge grand challenge of climate change that's facing our generation.
Well, Tyrus Miller, make that case that artists and social scientists and authors, that all of these scholars of the humanities should be an integral part of addressing climate change. What is it that they bring to the table?
Well, I think that one of the things that we know from increasingly from the science is the role that human beings have played in bringing about this major change in our climate. And we need to understand those human factors that lie behind it. What kind of motivational factors, what kinds of cultural factors, and then also what kinds of values do we bring to bear in our relationship to the environment, either in a negative way or in a positive way that will help to repair and positively affect our relationship to the environment. So this is an area where humanists really specialize in those kinds of questions from the different disciplines of philosophy, of literature, of art. And we have important insights really to bring to bear. It's in no way to say that we don't need the science and we don't need as much technical ingenuity and expertise to deal with these problems, but we need to understand the human domain to really be able to make effective and ethical choices and to motivate people to adopt these kinds of solutions.
You, in your piece on theconversation.com, give multiple examples of, you know, dance companies with performances that are about climate change, or referencing the entire new literary genre of cli-fi, climate-based, typically fairly apocalyptic fictional writing. Obviously, scholars in the humanities are already taking on the issue of climate change. Does your collaboration and this idea of working closely together between natural scientists and social scientists and others in the humanities seem rare?
It's not completely rare. There's, I think, an increasing awareness that we need to work together in these ways. And we can point to a number of different efforts, some major voices, like, for instance, the Indian novelist Amitav Ghosh, about 10 years ago, wrote a very important book called The Great Derangement, which was a challenge to writers to say, we writers aren't really stepping up to the plate and helping people to imagine what the effects of climate change will be and ways in which we might imagine a better world or a better outcome. So I think that people are beginning this discussion, but it's a difficult one. We are used to being in our separate domains and not working together, and we're still moving towards ways in which we can frame a common language, understand each other's ways of working and thinking. And it's an exciting possibility, but it's one that really takes a lot of work and a lot of patience.
I want to speak from the science perspective, too. The arts are not just a medium for communicating science, but they are, in their own right, valuable and important components of culture. Science has a role to play in understanding these other disciplines in a more complete and more nuanced way than we have in the past.
Well, Stephen Allison, as the natural scientist in your particular duo, I guess scientists have really been put in the hot seat. And I'm thinking about things like congressional testimony, where officials are turning to scientists to say, what is the scope of the problem? What are the possible solutions? And scientists are usually very careful to try to say, well, here is what we could do. Here are the likely outcomes if we were to do those things. Mm-hmm. But it's often misconstrued, and it's become very politicized and very polarized. It seems that what the humanities bring to that is the should instead of the could, right? Actually getting at those values and what should we do? Do you think that by more deeply involving those in the humanities, it could perhaps depolarize some of the debate around the science of climate change?
I think that's a hope here for sure. Depoliticizing, depolarizing the issue of climate change is a big challenge. It's probably as big of a challenge as understanding the scientific basis for climate change, I would argue. So definitely humanities and other disciplines have a role to play there. But I really agree with what you're saying, that the science has a limit in terms of what people can take from it. They need to have this sort of moral perspective and ethical perspective, thinking about the human dimensions of the science. And I think a good example of this is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, which is the conglomeration of all of the results of scientific studies that the United Nations puts together every few years. And if you look in this report, it's very almost sterilized. There are not judgments made about which solutions should be adopted. So the scientists can say, you know, here are all your options. And it's actually very dangerous for a scientist to say, oh, well, you should use this particular option. And that's why we need other people at the table, people with cultural sensitivity, scholars who understand the cultural and ethical context of those different policy options.
I also would add that I think that climate is a kind of abstraction. We experience weather, we experience our immediate natural environment. It's very hard for people to have an intuitive relationship to the processes that are being described as climate change. It's not just weather is hotter in the summer or something like that. And we tend to experience these kinds of intuitable ideas through stories, through images, through expressions of art. And it helps people get an intuitive grasp of something that is actually very complex and very abstract and difficult to understand in an intuitive way. So I think that the challenge of humanist and also of creative artist is to try to take that abstraction and make it something that is tangible and experienceable for people so that they can actually begin to think about it in ways that are guiding their decision making.
To that point, you've already mentioned how the humanities could perhaps deepen what comes out of those reports from the UN, but there are already examples where the very climate models on which we are basing decision-making are being influenced by those in the humanities. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I thought that was really interesting, and I was looking for some examples of, how the humanities have influenced the process of climate science, and I was very curious to see the origin of the term scenario. And scenarios are actually summaries of theater that were developed in the Italian Baroque period. And the scenario is meant as kind of a pitch for what was coming up in the next play or something. And so that principle gets applied through language to our broader culture and in this case to climate models, which use what are called scenarios or kind of storylines for different trajectories of society and society's energy use and society's decisions. And what I thought was interesting about that history of the term scenario is that there's an opportunity to come up with a much better pitch, a much broader range of ideas or visions for how the future might look, because the scientific world tends to constrain that vision to be, what do we have today in terms of technology? What are the options that we have now that are kind of conservative? And they're not necessarily thinking about this kind of global stage of how society and culture can evolve over decades or even 100 years. And so I think if we have that perspective, that's what it's going to take to make the massive societal transformations that we're going to need to address the climate problem.
I love that idea of climate modeling as improv theater, essentially. And obviously, if we radically change the scenarios that we include in climate models, or radically change the options or the context of what we consider in things like UN reports, that has the potential to influence decision-making at very high levels. I wonder how you think that a broader understanding and a greater involvement of the humanities in the climate change issue might change public attitudes about climate change and perhaps individual decision-making and individual actions.
One of the things that I've realized in engaging with this issue and thinking even about my own life, we mention in the article some historical work about the rise of a kind of California culture of suburbia and highways and the kind of celebration of the car as a symbol of personal freedom and independence. And as a long-term resident of California and as an American who really grew up in the age of this kind of petro-utopia and, myth of fossil fuel and the automobile, I'm looking at my own life and thinking about when I was 15 and the symbol of being independent from my parents was, getting that driver's license and being able to go out in the car.
Absolutely. That is such a coming-of-age marker for our society at this point.
So many of us, have that experience. And I think just highlighting those kinds of ways in which our identity, our sense of value, our sense of freedom is entangled with our consumption of fossil fuels, at least puts us in a state of mind to be able to reflect about the kinds of choices that we make. How much does my identity, my sense of freedom depend on this? And how do I begin to sort that out and disentangle it in ways that I can make better choices for our future?
I would add to that also the big scale decisions that we have to make about tackling climate change, whether we adapt to it or whether we mitigate it. Those really have to do with a cultural decision. And there are very different consequences for different groups of people, for indigenous people, for example, whether we, just try to build seawalls and keep the ocean from encroaching onto our wealthy enclaves in the United States or the Western world, versus taking action to mitigate and actually reduce our consumption of fossil fuels and thereby globally reduce the impacts of climate change.
Stephen Allison is a professor of ecology and evolutionary biology and earth system science at the University of California, Irvine. Tyrus Miller is dean of the School of Humanities there, and together they've written about why science needs the humanities to solve climate change. You can find that piece on theconversation.com. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.